we like to end the show Monday through Friday at this time. If you've got to tell me something good story, just simply something that put a smile on your face, something that warmed your heart, brought a tear of joy, or that your buddy who's a co-host came in and told you, hey, we should call John Taylor.
Hey, I know a guy.
He's in the Galvin National Guard, and he's got a great story that he's been spreading across all media platforms, and John's on the air with us. John, how are you?
Great. Thanks, guys.
Hey, John.
John.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. John, you served in the Galva National Guard. Are you still a member of the National Guard?
No. I got out shortly after I got back from Iraq in 2005.
Served in Iraq in from when? From when to when?
From 2004 to 2005. We were essentially the second wave of troops in there.
Well, before we start, we want to thank you for your service. But there's some men and women who don't happen to be Americans who you'd like to thank them for their service, and a lot of unknown people, and we'll never know a lot of them. Tell us about your cause. You are back now. You served over there, but you had a lot of help from a lot of just regular Iraqi and Afghan citizens, specifically one who was your translator. Is that correct?
Right, and we actually had multiple translators. For every patrol. So we did patrols 24 hours a day, and then for every patrol we had a translator. Sometimes more than one, but usually just one. And those people, I mean, they were just regular people, local people to the areas that we were patrolling in, and they would go on patrols with us. They were side by side with us.
They believed in what you were doing over there.
Absolutely. Yeah, they were 100% behind the cause.
With a lot of information, right?
What's that?
Their information was critical to your missions.
Right. And it wasn't just a matter of them, translating from Arabic to English and English to Arabic. There was a lot more subtleties that they brought to the table. So, for example, they knew a lot of things culturally that we had no idea about.
I read one was just body language.
Right, body language, or just, just areas, or just, like, times of day, or rituals and things, just, like, things that we had no clue about.
So we're going into this area. Watch your P's and Q's. Don't do this. Don't make any sudden movements. Things that got you prepared for what you were about to go in, which was probably pretty dangerous and pretty unknown on a daily basis.
Absolutely. And, we relied on the interpreters to be able to really kind of, they were the ones who would tell us, okay, I've got a gut feeling about this. Like, yeah, this guy's lying to me, or yeah, this guy's telling the truth, and that was the only sort of gauge that we had for the most part to tell, who was actually telling the truth or who wasn't.
So, John, are you saying were they there sometimes, like during interrogations when you were trying to find information out? They were sitting right next to you.
Absolutely, everything we did, they were there with us. Everything.
Wow.
I mean, when we got blown up, they got blown up. The only difference was they were in civilian clothes most of the time. So, and which made it even worse because they were easy to pick out. That it would be easy to see a guy that's hanging around with the soldiers in civilian clothes and, realize, oh, hey, that guy's an interpreter.
They were considered, you said, traitors, right?
They were considered traitors, and there was even a bounty for killing them, and which, when you've got an environment with really, really high unemployment. I mean, I think when we were there, it was like probably 70% unemployment, I would guess. I mean, no one had jobs, no one had money. And so, if you offer someone a large amount of money to kill one of these people, even an average person who wouldn't necessarily be malicious would take that offer.
They're going to take you up on it.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
because it was a really dire situation for everyone.
John Taylor's from Cambridge, and he served in the Galva National Guard 2004-2005, worked with many, not just translators, but just regular citizens, Iraqis and Afghans that helped the American cause on a daily basis. And one specifically, and we'll just call him, like you said, John, codename Jaguar. What are you trying to do for Jaguar? And am I right saying he was a translator?
Yes. Yeah, he was a translator. And so what I've been doing... almost a year ago, in November 2015, I got a phone call from a friend, and he said, "Hey, Jaguar's alive." And I, you know, when he said that, I thought he was joking. I thought it must be like a scam or something like that. Someone trying to get something, you know. And I said, "Look, I have to talk to the guy. There's no way that he's still alive." So, I think it was that same day. I ended up getting in touch with him, and I talked to him, and sure enough, it was him.
Yeah.
And which totally, it still to this day blows my mind that he's still alive, because these guys didn't last very long. Their life expectancy was very short. And so since that time, I've been working to try to get him to the United States, and his family. He's got a wife and 5 children.
Right.
And what I've discovered, there's several things I've discovered. Is one thing is that it's nearly impossible to get someone in his situation out of Iraq or Afghanistan. It really is. It's almost nearly impossible. And I can kind of describe to you some of the things I've done so far. And the other part of that is that, you know, as I've told people about this and I've kind of shared the story, I realized that most people don't know that these men exist.
Right.
And you know, the sacrifices that they've made for the United States, and and then the situations, the dangers that they face now. For example, Jaguar, he's in hiding. He can't work. He can't leave the area that he's staying at. Most of his family has disowned him because it's a safety risk for them to be around him, to associate with him.
It's known he was helping.
Absolutely, yeah. And everyone knows that, and so he has to hide. I mean, and he's been in hiding really this entire time.
I can imagine the red tape that you're going through, and it's probably red tape's probably not even a word to describe to get he and his family over here. Are you making progress though?
I believe I am. I really don't. You know, it's hard to say, but I believe so. So through this process, you know, I've contacted a whole bunch of different people, senators, congressmen, congresswomen, the Department of State, Department of Homeland Security,
sure.
The International Organization for Migration. The list goes on and on.
John, are some folks saying, "Hey, John, you're crazy. Stop it."
Everyone says that, but but the thing is, most of them just tell me wait, and which is the worst answer that they could give me. They just say wait, and I said, "Look, I don't have time. This guy doesn't have time. He's had an application in for refugee status since 2011, and they're telling me to wait." And I said, "Look, it's never going to happen. You know, if it hasn't happened in 5 years, it's not going to happen unless something changes." And so that's what I'm really kind of working towards. I think that there needs to be some sort of legislation to help these people out, because the current system is broken.
John, you keep working on this. This is amazing, and you're not going to stop, are you?
Absolutely not. No,
that's
no.
Awesome.
I one way or another, I'm going to bring this guy back. If I have to go to Iraq myself and physically bring him back, I will.
Yeah.
It's really come to that point, but I do believe that there is some hope, and there's been some things here that have come up that I think are pretty promising. So,
well, and the more exposure this gets, the more people that are going to reach out and help you get this done, I think.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so, and I think so. I really do.
John, you're putting yourself on the line, but I get why you're doing it, because you know in your heart these people, you're not really putting your life on the line right now, and these guys did it for you each and every day, and you knew one personally, found out that Jaguar, codenamed Jaguar, was still there and trying to bring him and his family home. John Taylor was in the Galvel National Guard, served in Iraq. John, we thank you for your service. And I commend you for what you're trying to do. Keep us updated. You know our friend Dan that's with us. Let Dan know what's going on, and we'd love to hear the progress on this.
Great. Well, I sure appreciate it, guys, and thank you.
Thank you so much, John.
Yep, thanks.
That is a truly an awesome Tell Me Something Good. Thanks for bringing that to my attention today, Dan. That's amazing. John Taylor there, and he's from Cambridge, Illinois, with the Galvin National Guard. Can't wait to see how that goes as he tries to get Jaguar and his family over here. If you can reach out and help someone and change someone's day or their week or their life today, do so. Take care. Have a good one.
Tell me something.